That's why I take notes.
Okay.
We're on side two of take two, and we were talking about how Vaughn had married a...
Right, Vietnamese, and so...
Was this a question, though, of you just being apart for so long?
Yes, yes. And the draft. If you were married, mm-hmm. you didn't have to be drafted.
Mm-hmm. He could have married you?
But I'd have to be there. And so that really changed the direction of my life. And let me see. Also, about that time, June and Anne and all of us started networking.
That's June Polcini and
Anne Hensley. Mm-hmm. And that has been just incredible for our support system. Professionally, Anne, of course, was an ESL professor,
mm-hmm, right.
So, and we could share a great deal. Mm-hmm. And June and Anne, all of us, you know, we meet just all the time, mm-hmm, could talk about our experiences and, oh, you felt the same way too, you know, in Vietnam, etc. So that was really good.
What happened after the 10 years with the project?
I worked my way into other school districts. Mm-hmm. I've never been given credit for any of the work that I did in Vietnam, mm-hmm, in any of the school districts. Mm-hmm. I continue to teach ESL, and I really love teaching ESL.
Where do you work now?
I work in Torrance Unified School District, mm-hmm, in the morning and afternoon. And I have a tenured position with them. Mm-hmm. And Los Angeles, I work at night with LA Unified School District in Gardena. And they've continually denied me tenure. And
but they like your part-time services.
Any warm body.
Uh-huh.
I could be replaced anytime. But I've been with them since 76, longer than anybody else at the school.
Which would actually bring us up to the present day as,
yeah,
far as career trajectory. But I'd like to go back and talk about some, kind of cultural and political issues. One of the things, I think it was Anne who said, he said, oh, Billy, she really shook him up. And I said, about what? And he says, about women.
Yeah.
And I said, what do you mean? Well, women in IVS, just women education in general. And so
right.
It was one of the reasons why I was anxious to talk to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think... First of all, there's, from my experience, whenever you say you're a teacher, people have a reaction. And a lot of times it's probably from their experience of teachers. And I would like it to be positive from the good teachers. But more than not, I discover it's negative. Oh, yes, I remember. And
Mrs. Johnson.
Really?
Or
really?
Or Mr. Johnson.
Really? But with women, you know, okay, so you have... Women educators, and I think that when we arrived, that there was a great deal of this feeling, because we were in the education team, mm-hmm, and we were English teachers, and, mm-hmm, you know, in the past, IVS had been geared towards agriculture, mm-hmm, and that in and of itself, English versus agriculture sometimes has a conflict. It doesn't have to at all, and I didn't come with stereotypes, I feel, but the women and the first women to arrive made it very difficult. I mean, just the logistics of it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, whoa, where are they going to sleep? Where they come to Saigon, we've got to have a place for the women's dorm. Mm-hmm. Women have these, like transportation, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it was really difficult for them to accommodate the women, and to see things from a woman's point of view, Betty and I have never been quiet. That was what
Thank
was
goodness.
So delightful,
and delightful
you
about
know, delightful them. About us, mm-hmm, and occasions would come up all the time. You know, I mean. There was one time, did Betty tell you about spending the night on the the military field?
Well, I wouldn't tell you if she did, but I don't think so.
Okay, no. Well, we had an occasion where Don actually had to fly up to Queen Yan and tell us how to properly behave.
Well, how are you behaving badly? Women behaving badly.
Well, the women behaving badly. See, okay, the military base was in Queen Yan. All right. And the guys were really nice, and they always invited us for movies or whatever the case may be, you know. And so, steak night or whatever. And one night, the commander had never anticipated American women coming on the base. So they had a rule as to what time women left the base. And, you know, we didn't know. Benny and I really didn't know all this stuff. And so one night we stayed past the curfew. We truly did not know. So there was no way for us to get back to town. Of course, the guys knew. The military guys knew. So we stayed in the dental compound. You know, because he came up, what, every 2 weeks to do his dental work. And he had cots, so we were... So the guy said, you know, in the morning, when you hear the ambulance back up to the hooch, you know, just get in the ambulance and we'll take you back into town. This is, by the way, when we were staying in the hotel. So we were always looking for a way to get out of the hotel. I mean, I'm kidding you not. It was like a cabin in a ship.
Oh, no, I know exactly what it looks
like. Okay, okay.
And I'm sure our listeners
and the great door and, you know, the fan going like this. And Ben has a terrible time with heat. He was not a problem, but the confinement was a big problem for me. Anyway, so we spent the night on the base, and the two of us, you know, here we are in our cots, and who's going to sleep? And hearing for this ambulance, they drive up, they get us in, and, well, of course, word got out, and the commander invited us in to tell us what we weren't supposed to do, and that there were certain such hours. Excuse me, the minister, the local minister, American, he was his wife. The minister and I didn't get along. He was always keeping his wife pregnant. She was on the verge of a nervous breakdown, so I'd go and take care of the kids and give her a break. But anyway, so she could just go out, you know, relax a little bit without her children, because she had those. Anyway, he proceeds to tell us how women should act. And then Don got called because of, you know, the commander, an officer had. So Don comes up and tells us, you know, well, and you know, if you look at this in perspective, I would like to tell some of the guys how to act. I mean, I hadn't a clue. I wouldn't even be pointing fingers. It was like, if you look at this in perspective, it's like the funniest thing in the world.
The guys are out every night.
Pardon me. And so here's Don. And I mean, why he even thought, you know, to tell the truth. And then he gets into Bermuda shorts, and Betty can't wear her Bermuda. Well, and we have to, we set an image on who we should socialize with, you know. And well, Betty was just furious. I'm sure she's already told you that part. And Dick Kirsted, by the way, who is an ex-IVSer, we were at his house having this conversation. I can remember sitting on the couch.
We were at Dick's place. It was so, the two of you and
the
Don.
You know, our
I just look on Dick's face alone. I wish I was there.
It was wonderful. Was wonderful. But at the time, it wasn't, and I was furious, and it, emotionally, I was getting it from the other side of being too Vietnamese, because I'd wear my yao yai, and when I'd go to parties and I'd be in my yao yai, you know, it's like, what are you trying to do? Get native, you know? And I was getting all these comments. Here's Betty, you know, with Fred, and telling us who not to do. I mean, it was, that just did not understand women. I mean, there was not a clue what was going on. And to admit it was never something that came up, just never. So it was always an issue. It was always like oil and water for us. And I will say, though, you know, I will give Don credit. I mean, he let me become educational specialist, and I really will give him credit for that, because In the United States, I've been turned down for so many things that, you know, that would have been an issue also.
But
in education, you know, women's role in education gets very interesting.
Yes, but also it's traditional, you know, because, you know, in the 60s, it's traditional that the woman's going to be the teacher, too.
Pardon me, the teacher, but not the director.
Uh-huh. Well, good. I'm glad we have that on the record.
Okay.
But what I find interesting is that, if you know, when you interview people like
Stephen
Dick.
Yeah.
And people who preceded him in that era. I mean, what was it? Bob Hargraves, I think, was there.
Bob was my good friend.
Right.
Bob and I used to go to Hunk.
Yeah.
Did you interview Bob?
Oh, sure.
Oh, I wish.
He has the most magnificent beard.
Oh. Bob is, yeah, he's interesting. Mm-hmm. And then there was Bob McNiff.
Haven't interviewed him.
He's in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the reason I mention that is,
yeah,
you look at these people. Who's another one? Several who are all professors of agriculture.
Yes.
Who are married to strong women and are very happy.
Yes.
But you could see them in Vietnam not even knowing what to do with a woman.
Yeah.
Not from a
No, Dick never had any trouble.
No, just...
No. Dick never,
yes.
ever.
No, and I'm not referring to that. It's just that all these early... the early agriculturalists...
The ag guys.
They're just guys in a guy's world.
Yeah.
They're not... Most of them just did agriculture because they had to.
Right.
Or, you know, they're obviously adventurous. They're not cloistered, but they just wouldn't know what to do. It's like if someone handed you a baby.
Oh no, I recognize that. Yeah. The only thing is there was never any,
what shall we do? Right. No analysis,
you know,
of the situation.
This is never. And, you know, that part of it was very interesting, there was no second level. That's a good way of putting it for me. There was no second level. It was like, this is it, and that's it. That's where it stopped.
What about the fact that there were no women up through the hierarchy?
Oh, that's why I say I really give Don credit for giving me that job as educational specialist. And I wrote up the job description. I wrote everything. Mm-hmm. You know, and then decision making, you know, it's like, and IVS was built like that. Even though, again, Dr. Stevenson, of all the interviews I did when I was getting out and getting a career, mm-hmm. and maybe in my whole lifetime, he was so thorough and he asked really great things, you know. And you came away, you there was no demeaning as a mm-hmm. feminine contribution to the organization.
Would you say there was? Yeah, there wasn't it.
No, there wasn't with Dr. Stevenson.
But do you think there
that interview?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But do you feel there ever was?
A demeaning
yeah.
about women,
uh-huh.
absolutely.
And why do you, what would you attribute that cause?
I don't know. You know, that's, I mean, like I say, they came with their packages. They came mm-hmm. with their, and I'm not too sure it would be any different than any other place in the world at that time. You see, this is the time when women were finally getting an advantage, you see, of even being recognized. So I'm not too sure, and they certainly wouldn't have felt out of place.
Mm-hmm.
They could do just exactly what they did,
mm-hmm.
Because that's what went on at home.
Mm-hmm.
So when you ask me why, I don't see it, you know. It's just that was the here and now, and that's what we were dealing with. And
well, did you, I mean, especially because of Don, but did you ever have any sense of being discriminated against?
Absolutely, all the time.
All the time.
Absolutely.
In what do you call it, absence or in, what's the word for it? Passive or aggressively discriminated against?
I think both.
I'm trying to find
an
example.
And, you know, well, yes. I remember when we arrived. The day we arrived, and Bob Plummer, we got off the plane, and he pointed at us just like, look! Very interesting. That said a lot. That's a good example. Most of the time it wasn't that blatant.
Mm-hmm.
We asked for screens at our house, and it was like, oh, you sissies, oh, you babies. You know. And it got very interesting as years went on. The guys asked for a lot of things the women did.
That's because it was that new generation, and we were
weak. Yeah, give me a break.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's like that. You know, it's like
code signs. Yeah.
It was happening over there, just like it was happening here. And but there's no question about it. It was definitely an issue. And you know, growth and all that was taking place, I'm sure. I know that one of the best things that ever happened in IDS was the day that June became part of the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember specifically saying to June, wow, a woman made it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate saying that because I like saying June made it. But it got to be that kind of an issue.
But of course, it was also time to start doing things like that.
Yes,
I mean,
not
always
call
late.
IDS innovative.
Yes, exactly.
But, you know.
Because it's hard to character. I mean, the organization is so, I don't know, small is one word, and another word is inbred, that what's interesting, I mean, I it's very hard to document when mistakes were being made and they persisted. Criticism eventually struck home, and something generally was done about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it was too late,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't sound like there was a conspiracy to stop change from happening.
I remember one of the funniest things that happened all the time, and that was like, why couldn't she be more like Vietnamese women? You know, that would be an implication,
yes.
a direct comment,
uh-huh.
and I would say to myself, yeah.
If they only knew what Vietnamese women were like. Yes.
You know, and Ann and I would just like, oh, we just sparkle when we hear, you know.
So it's not just sexist, it's racist.
Ah! Yeah. You know, it was like, yeah. Oh, I felt very uncomfortable as a woman in IDS for a long time. And that was fine, you know, because as I say, we've all coped.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly has happened in the United States. It was nothing new to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people say about Saudi Arabia, I felt more comfortable in my classroom in Saudi Arabia, you know, with all those male engineers with their philosophy of women, Saudis, than I did many times.
Why is that? Because you know where you stand? Or
I don't know. You know, that's very hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
It might be because there is a definite role there where all of this other wasn't even addressed in most people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Although it is now, to a small extent.
Oh, yeah. Well, the women certainly made a lot of contribution.
Mm-hmm.
And that will always be, you know, going on. And the Vietnamese had no trouble with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the first things I loved, was when I arrived in Vietnam and I recognized how comfortable I could be as a woman in the Vietnamese culture.
And why do you think that's true?
Well, because of women, Vietnamese women.
Let's get it on the record.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, Vietnamese women run Vietnamese
society. They're wonderful. And men are, too, you know. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's a case of when you're talking culture, it's just, even now, even last summer, I traveled in Vietnam alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no problem. No problem whatsoever. And respecting me for... you know, whatever, or not respecting me
mm-hmm.
for whatever, it wasn't an issue. So that's, you know, that's just part of it.
Well, tell us, how did you put together this trip that you took last summer?
Well, I had tried to go with Don Luce's group.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in 88
mm-hmm.
or 89 or around then. It must have been later, but whatever. And they couldn't go to Quy Nhơn. And the only way I was going back to Vietnam was if I could go to Quy Nhơn.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, that was very important to me. So, excuse me, I kept listening to my Vietnamese friends, and as soon as I heard people were traveling to Vietnam and going to Quy Nhơn freely,
mm-hmm.
that's when I said, okay, it's time for me to go. So, of course, I hadn't been to Hanoi. And all my friends, including June and Anne, had been to Hanoi. And so I, you know, I'd seen all these gorgeous pictures. I was ready. And And June gave me a contact in Hanoi. And Lonely Planet, which is a great
book.
Way to travel, gave me the right hotel to stay at. And I just went from there. And I planned it on my own. My goal was to go and make contact in Hanoi and give a workshop or two to the ESL teachers. Mm-hmm. I was prepared. I was happy to do it. I recognized the problems with Vietnamese education right now, and they are horrendous, and the lack of education, and higher education in particular. And so I was, willing, and they were petrified the minute I mentioned teaching or what I might like to do. They are embarrassed about their educational system at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's so inferior to what it used to be. And of course, I'm so enthusiastic about Vietnamese and education that it just, it really was not successful. I could not talk to the teachers. I talked to some teachers, mm-hmm. individually, of course, and visited with people. But so I went from Hanoi to Da Nang, and I visited Lely's center, mm-hmm. in Lely Hayslope, mm-hmm. Heaven and Earth Center, and met Mark. And
great
conversation. Very because,
interesting person.
Yeah. Well, it reminded me of IVS, uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, the parallels were really great, and especially since he just had this wonderful picture of the school they put the roof on, and I was, oh, yes, that's just great. And I was so glad to hear that those things were still happening. And then I went to Quy Nhon, which was a horrible experience.
Because?
And the town is just so filthy, so dirty. The beach is just, it just smells. The beach smells. It's that bad. And they brought in boats. The corruption is incredible in the town. It's just, it's one of those unfortunate experiences and situations where the town is just awful. And it didn't need to go that way, and it has gone that way. And they wouldn't let me on the school campus where I taught. Mm-hmm. So that was, a big disappointment. And also just when I arrived, the Sikh drivers were drunk and they were grabbing into the bus. And, it was a very bad experience. I had a young student, Vietnamese from, he's living in Norway, mm-hmm. an architectural student. Mm-hmm.
You hang
I love this. I
yes,
do.
Right.
Even in college, my Yugoslavian friend was an architect.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I don't do it on purpose.
Uh-huh.
And he helped me out, and his family's, they're fishermen, and they're wonderful. He invited me to his home. Here, complete.
How's the fishing?
Terrible. They're overfished.
Mm-hmm.
They have a few hours at night where now they can catch any. You see, it's a shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just deplorable. And the way they've redirected the water channels, and they've got the boats out on the sand over here, which, they never let the boats over here. I'm not trying to relive the past. I'm just saying it's like putting asphalt in the United States over everything and wondering why we have floods. It's the same problem in Quy Nhon. So it's very disappointing. And then I went from Quy Nhon. I spent a week in Quy Nhon, thinking, of course, it was going to be wonderful.
Yes.
And then from Quy Nhon, then I went to Saigon, and I stayed with my Vietnamese family there. So, at which my original contact was from the Buddhist Association,
mm-hmm.
one of my former students.
Mm-hmm.
It's her family that I stayed with. And so that's how I, and the trip was wonderful, but in so many ways, just very, very disappointing at the realities. And I continue to be optimistic, but I just really would like to see schools. Schools are awful. I get students, Vietnamese students now,
mm-hmm.
who cannot do rudimentary math. Now I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating,
mm-hmm.
2 + 2 = 4. They don't no math at all. When I lived in Vietnam, just like I talked to Hung last night, she's the librarian in Modesto that's one of the students that I taught,
mm-hmm.
years ago,
mm-hmm.
and the family that I stayed with, it's her family. When I went to Vietnam in 1962, you could say any Vietnamese student could compete internationally with their education. Mm-hmm. No problem whatsoever. I mean, at many levels. They had an education that was, you know, that's why as teachers we had to be really sharp because they had a lot of education. Mm-hmm. You had to be on your toes. And if you didn't get it in the States, you know, then you needed to study. You needed to do a lot just to teach those kids, mm-hmm. those students, those young people. And so that's not there. And when I was in Hanoi and I was talking to people, and I've met people here that the Vietnamese government sends here, they don't have the education. It's just, they very often are traveling, it's really for the trip. It's really the travel. It doesn't have to do with education. Now, I'd be curious about your experience, if you've had any experience with that.
Well, just looking at libraries and the university system, you know, it's clear that, I mean, despite host priorities, it doesn't seem that much priority was placed on education, but I think largely that was because there were no resources. And it's a boycotted country that was still fighting a war till 1979.
Right.
So,
and wanting to rewrite history.
Well, that too, but that doesn't have much to do with math, usually. So that might be, you know, where do you get your teachers from, you know, when you're at war? And economic hardships caused by bad, you know.
Right.
Bad economic conditions in the country, and that will...
And priority is an education. You know, when the soldiers were fighting so much, in the north, et cetera, their whole lives, and like you say, for that expense, mm-hmm. those years, education was not a priority. So how can you, I cannot expect them to have education as a priority, because how can I expect that?
Yes, but you then also have a generation of dead weight, that is undereducated people,
right.
And that makes it harder, right. harder to regenerate. I mean, to think of Afghanistan.
Oh, it's going to be at least three generations, and I'm hoping for then.
Mm-hmm. So it's a rough go.
Yeah.
When you were working with the Buddhist Association, did you ever get any feedback about the war? The people that you associated with, about how they felt about the war in general and how they felt about the U.S.?
At the time, especially my first contract with IVS, the war and the conversation of the war would be around, if we just fight hard enough, we're going to win, we're nationalists, you know, we. Now, the second time around, my second contract, people talked about the war more for security reasons. And while I lived in Saigon, I had curfews and mm-hmm. tear gas, you know, in my house, and I learned how to live with tear gas, you know, what to do when I was in tear gas. And so I did hear about the war, and I did know about the war more. Mm-hmm. And the Buddhist students, trying to think of how that would come about. I would say, and this is just general, because, you know, I didn't talk about the war. That mm-hmm. was not... In fact, I really tried not to be political. Mm-hmm. That was really one of the things. But the students would talk more about safe areas that I could travel to. Mm-hmm. See, I always went to my students and asked them, where can I fly next week? Mm-hmm. Because if we have assignments, mm-hmm. and I'd ask about the security. That's how I found out about security, was I'd ask my students. So not to say I wouldn't talk about the war. No, I'd talk about where is it safe to fly. Mm-hmm. But the philosophy of the war, I don't think. I mean, sometimes in frustration, students would tell me Americans are not doing enough. You know, they're not giving us enough. You're not doing enough. Let me see what else would I, from my students. There was anti-American feeling. You know, I
in
certainly.
In what sense?
The sense of you're corrupting my country. Financial. It basically came down to finance, usually a financial issue. Like, if Americans weren't here, it wouldn't be so expensive.
Was that true?
Yeah. You know, the military, the economy, just Americans, and so many people were spending so much more money, and Vietnamese couldn't spend that much money for something. You know, and sometimes it come down to the point of the American would get it instead of Vietnamese, because they had the money.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of stuff, that would come up.
What about prostitution and bribery or
The issue of prostitution came up immediately when I arrived in Quy Nhơn, because the only women that were on the beach besides Betty and myself were the prostitutes, because Vietnamese women didn't go to the beach.
Right.
So